Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why Chevy Silverado is the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Hardworking and dependable. Test drive a Silverado at your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer today. Chevy, drive Chicago.
We are coming to you live from the studios of WKGC-FM, high atop the Charles Hilton Center for Advanced Technology and Hospitality Management at Gulf Coast State College in Panama City, Florida.
Yes, we made it through the fog. A couple people saw our pictures posted on our Facebook page and said, is that humidity? Yes, it's humid, but that's fog.
It felt like we were driving through a film noir novel.
Yes, yes, yes. And when you look at the pictures, there are a couple of pretty boring pictures. And I know you don't have to point out that the lights are different here than they are in Chicago, because that's kind of a given. But we're driving over a bridge that's like a mile long, and you don't see anything on either side of us.
And usually you can see some of the college in the distance.
Yeah.
You see some of the huge high-rises on either side. This time, you see nothing.
Nothing.
But we're driving up into who knows what.
Kind of creepy. Yeah. But we made it. We're here. Sorry about Northwestern. Boo. Hiss.
Yeah.
They fought a good fight. But it's great to hear Dave Bennett.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Always good to hear Dave
Bennett.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we should introduce some of the assembled clan tonight. Here in the studio, we have to thank Becca Stark for setting things up and for navigating Tom Hoot, who is our other engineer when we're down here in Florida. He left town. Well, he left town, but not before.
Abandoned.
And we will post a picture later. He had to connect this weird long cable.
100 foot of cable.
To make sure that we would have the right kind of... Becca, you want to explain
this? Wait a minute. Let me ask. Are we on?
Yeah.
Testing. 1, 2. Hello.
I mean, I hope so.
I do, too. I got fingers and toes crossed.
But it has something to do with a new studio setup here
yes.
in Florida, and... Tom wanted to make sure that we would be really, really able to communicate with Chicago. So there is literally, and Johnny will post a picture later, there is a cable running from where? Outside, all the way down the hall.
It's not outside the building. It's just down this hallway. And it's
to a window.
To a window so that we have access because of the tower across the street from us. But it just in the studio, there's too many walls between it. So there's a cable running from right down the hall. All the way in here. I think it's like a 100-foot cable.
And I have visions of one of us getting up to run to the bathroom and boom, we're not on the air anymore.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I've tried taping it down, so hopefully that won't happen.
Well, thank you.
But, you know, we'll see.
Well, Tom, he said, I'm sorry, I have to leave town, but I've left you in good hands. To which Becca said, who? Well, who's coming in, right?
I would like to meet this person.
Back in Chicago, we've got our Julian. Hey, Julian.
Who, me?
Yes, you! And Bob Fukuda. Hey, Bob.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Bob.
And over in the newsroom, Ron Brown. Hey, Ron.
Hi, everybody.
Everybody okay on your end? What does it look like out the window? Did I miss the fireworks? Anything good? What did I miss?
Oh,
tell me.
I didn't see any fireworks tonight.
No?
No.
Okay. Because we're not in town. That's why.
See, they
heard we left town. Yes. Ron, before you get out of here, I texted you earlier tonight because two movies that we have on our list to see while we're down here. One is the epic Elvis movie.
Yes.
And we're hearing more and more.
Oh, my gosh.
People that we really respect are saying, yeah, you really got to go see this one. They dug up some stuff that you haven't seen before.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but you know what, Ron? You did not mention this in your review last week.
What's that?
They apparently, Lerman does not credit Elvis's band in the credits.
Oh, yeah, I didn't notice that.
People are complaining that there's no mention of James Burton or Ronnie Tutt.
Yeah.
Oh,
Jerry
my gosh.
Schiff, which is a huge, why on earth wouldn't you want to do that?
They are on display. Yeah, they really kick it. They're a great band.
And so musicians are kind of coming out of the woodwork going, hey, what gives? How come you would overlook?
Yeah,
kind of interesting. But I texted you because the other movie I had I want to see while we're here on vacation is I want to see The Bride because it's supposedly a mix of gothic, horror, and crime.
And music too, huh?
So I said, that just sounds wacky enough. And then this afternoon, I opened up my phone and there was a story from Screen Geek that people are walking out
Yeah, I couldn't find any other reference to that. I looked at that, and other than Screen Geek, I don't see anybody else reporting that. So it might be, you know,
maybe
just
it's
for
a ploy.
Clicks. Yeah, just for clicks.
Yeah, or to just get people to go, well, if it's that bad, I'm going to go see it myself.
Yeah, but that could be a good publicity stunt.
Yeah.
I guess the important question is, did you walk out or stay?
No, I stayed. I mean, I rolled my eyes quite a few times. But
that was
okay.
The sound we heard.
Well, yeah, that's it, but that's okay. I mean, it is. It's not a monster movie. It's more of a crime movie. It's just that the criminals are the bride of Frankenstein and Frankenstein for some reason. I don't know why.
Okay. Well, someone said it's like Bonnie and Clyde meet Frankenstein.
Yeah, it does. It brings to mind Bonnie and Clyde, the Rocky Horror Picture Show, Young Frankenstein, The Bride of Frankenstein, Poor Things,
how about
Natural Born Killers.
That's what I'm thinking,
Because that's the movie that's been told over and over and over again. You know, the two young lovers are out on the run. The cops are trying to get them. They've got nothing to lose. It's just this time they went, well, let's make them Frankenstein and the Bride of Frankenstein. How will that be? And they went, oh, good idea. Let's do it.
I wanted to see it because I'm a big fan of Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Yeah.
And she directs the movie, and her brother has a part in the movie. But I'm really a big fan of hers because of a cable TV series that she did. Did you ever catch The Deuce?
Yeah, I did, and I didn't care for that one too much.
Really?
Yeah,
dark? Too seedy?
I thought it was too exploitive, I didn't follow along with it at all. But I like her as an actress a lot. I've been following her
she's
career for a long time.
She's a terrific actress.
Yeah. And this movie looks so good. It's like the notes that I made is that, hey, you know, it's style over substance, but there's not a lot of story there at all, but it's okay. I mean, I was like, I'm okay with that. Frankenstein is in the 1930s shooting guns at the police officers. So what did you think it was going to be? Shakespeare? You know, I mean...
Okay, without giving anything away, how do they work music into it?
Well, they go to a dance.
Oh,
and
it's still Rocky Horror Picture.
Wait a minute.
And it's like
Frankenstein and the Bride of Frankenstein
go
to a disco?
I rolled my eyes. I'm telling you, I rolled my eyes a couple of times. That was one of the times. But it was funny. And I mean, it led up to it, and I was like, oh, okay, all right. So I enjoyed it because it just looks so good. It moves fast. You can't, you know, you can't think about the story at all because the story is not the strength. But it's worth seeing, and I don't see why anybody would walk out of that. They'd be missing a lot. It's a fun night at the movies.
I think we're onto something, though. I think it's a ploy. I really do think it's a marketing attempt because there are people, because I'm reading comments under that Screen Geek story, people are saying, oh, well, maybe I've got to go see this movie if it's that bad that people are walking out.
Because there was no story with that Screen Geek. There was no mention of any story. So there were no comments from theater goers and didn't say what city it was. So.
Right, right.
But Ron, it was on the internet, so it must be true.
But speaking of Screen Geeks, we should mention that Ron takes off his news hat and puts on his film critic hat on Thursday afternoons on Lisa's show, right?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I'm enjoying it. And I've been a film fan and a film critic. It's just nobody would ever listen to me before. You know, so
you've got them.
Now I have an outlet, and I can do that. And I'm the resident film critic here at WGN Radio, and I'm enjoying it. And it gives me an excuse to watch a lot of movies, and I've been doing that.
Yes, you have. And we've often told tales of Ron and his son going to 4 movies in one day.
Yep. Yes, we talk about movies on the phone a lot, and we still do that. Hey, I have a good recommendation for you.
Okay.
It's streaming right now. I mean, you have to rent it, but it's called H is for Hawk.
And
it's starring Claire Foy. You might know her from The Queen or the Crown?
Yeah.
The Queen. And she was also in a Ryan Gosling movie a few years back called First Man. And she's very, very good. And she's raising a goshawk in England. And it's a true story. And it's to deal with grief. She's just lost her father. And she doesn't want to think about anything else. So she just puts all her effort, all her energy into this training this hawk, you know, raising it and teaching it how to be a hawk. That's a thing. So it's kind of fascinating to watch how she does this, and she kind of loses herself in that and kind of like separates herself from society, from her friends, from her job. Everything is kind of falling away. She's like, you know, sleeping in a cardboard box.
Obsessed.
She's, yeah.
Oh,
so,
wow.
And it's
sleeping
just because. And, yeah. You know, it's just,
and for real, she did this?
And she really did this. Yes. This woman called Helen McDonald. And it's based on her her memoir called H is for Hawk, which was very well reviewed. Not that I read it, but I've come to find out that it was a very good book. And I can imagine that it was. There's a fascinating movie. It's called H is for Hawk. It cost me like, you know, $3.99 to rent it on Amazon. And well worth it. I was just like blown away. I thought it was terrific.
Awesome. Okay. I wrote that down because I'm sure it'll rain one day that we're here. So that'll be a perfect thing to do.
Put it on the list. Make a list. Yeah. Keep it by the TV.
Well, coming up tonight, we are tickled because we have a local guy that's going to stop by, but he's actually world renowned.
It has been too long since we've had Michael Lister on the show, and tonight the opportunity presented itself and we said, heck yeah. And if you're not familiar with Michael Lister, he is a New York Times best-selling author.
He's sold 5 million copies of his books worldwide.
And he has some new things that are coming out. Yeah. One of his books has been optioned for a movie. Another series has been optioned for a TV show. And he's got a ton of things going on. And he's just a fascinating guy and there's some new stuff. So we're going to talk with Michael a little later tonight.
And this is Tech Night. So Patrick will join us after midnight tonight. A lot to cover in the world of technology.
And for some reason, I think Patrick just may have to talk about this new MacBook Neo.
Yeah.
I know he usually doesn't talk much about Macs, but I think he just might.
Well, actually, it's very reasonably priced, so it's a good reason to talk about it. And it was unveiled earlier this week. So we've got a lot of ground to cover tonight. We hope that you guys will stick around for it.
And you can get to us all night long at 312-981-7200. That number again is 312-981-7200.
Don't get silly, because we still have a few hours to sit around
and chew
the fat. Should we do a little shout-out? Because we've got people that were signing in at 9 o'clock tonight saying, okay, where are you?
Okay.
That would be JP in Peoria. And Sherry Hanrahan is one of our regulars in Romeoville. And Gail Maslin in Tinley Park. And Carrie Johnson is in Newport Richey, Florida, celebrating her birthday tonight. Peter Jakubowicz is in Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin. Lynn Ginzer is in San Antonio, Florida. Nancy Hollins and Bonnie Pearson checked in. Chuck Snitchler is our buddy, best friend of this here radio show and station. He's in Valpo. Beverly Goodall is in Highwood. Dan Kendall is in Dublin, Ohio. David Shwaski. Sorry, David. You got a Z and a W and a J in your name. I apologize. I know I just butchered your name, but you know it's you. Catherine Bailey and Paul Osha is in Plant City, Florida. So we've got about 4 or 5 Florida cities that are checking in tonight.
Yeah.
Patricia Tintari in Northwest Indiana. Scott Cooper's in Naperville. Bobby Danos, our buddy out in Sandwich, is listening. Deb Scott is tuned in. Pat Powers, he's our buddy from Iowa, from KQWC Radio.
Happy birthday, Pat.
Yes, it's his 67th birthday tonight.
He's hanging out in Times Square.
Yes, I'm so happy for him. He tickles me because he's the hardest working man. If there's a flake of snow in Iowa, that man's going to the radio station. Floyd Moncrief is listening to us in Ottawa, Illinois. Jim Smith checked in, listening on his 78 Panasonic AM transistor radio. It's all fired up for the show. Bob Metzger says he can almost taste Thomas's donuts. So Bob has obviously been to this part of the world because that's legendary. Helen Thomas is in K-Town, Kenosha. Larry Mann tuned in. Pat Powers, I mentioned Pat. Eric Baum, he posted a cool picture. From Wells Beach, Maine, people in the snow stretched out on the beach. He said, just kind of shows that we're a year-round destination here at the beach. Jackie Spores, I should mention, Jackie said she's loving the blog. And she was surprised to find recipes and all kinds of good stuff on the blog.
And if you haven't checked out our blog, we really would appreciate it if you would. You can go to stevenjohnny.wordpress.com. We'd love it if you would subscribe. It's free. We don't spam you. You just get a notification anytime we do a new post.
And you get recipes, and you get pictures, and you get all that stuff that pops up over on Facebook, but sometimes there's more.
And sometimes we remember a particular celebrity or somebody that we've known.
Right. Diane Vasquez is our graphics guru. She put up a great Happy Saturday Spring Forward. It's going to feel so good at 6 o'clock when it's still daylight. Also, Lynn Kinzer is listening. She said, third time's the charm. Oh, she's in San Antonio. Oh, she's tried a couple places to check in. Gene Jacobson's in Milwaukee. Joan Bloom in Greenville, South Carolina. Brian Lefevre's in Bridgeport. Rob Mecklen is tuned in. Jan Reinhardt is in the laboratory. Sandy Blackwell is a fan of Michael Lister's. She's read his books, and she's really excited about him being on tonight.
He'll join us after the news at 11.
Yeah. Carrie Hunt is in Ruskin, Florida. Make that seven cities that have checked in Florida. Tracy Douglas is in Savannah, Georgia. Sharon Malone is in Kenosha. Susie Schimmel in Glen Ellen. Ellen Maria is in Marengo. Joan Smith in Holland, Michigan. Oh, man. Michigan tornadoes were
horrible.
Unreal.
Oh, boy.
Our thoughts are with you folks, because that was some scary stuff on Friday afternoon. Debbie Hardiman is in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Nancy Hollins in Northbrook. John Carlson is tuned in. Penny Schick in Tavares, Florida. Make that eight cities in the state of Florida. Kathy Abnauer is listening on Alexa. Bonnie Pearson, Grays Lake. Judy B. in Oakland. Jim Eaton in Waukegan. And Nancy Stewart is in Northwest Indiana.
And let me mention some of the countries checking out our blog. People, fortunately, from the United States, from Australia, Germany, Hong Kong, SAR, China.
Wow.
The United Arab Emirates, Canada, the Philippines, Netherlands, Japan, and Sweden.
Oh, all the cool kids.
Yeah. We are just tickled because we get to say hi to a guy that we haven't talked to in how long? It's been a couple of years, I think.
Yes, it has been a couple. It might have been even pre-COVID. It's been a long time. He's with us in the studio tonight.
New York Times bestselling author, Michael Lister, who is a resident of Wewahitchka, Florida.
Yes, I am.
Still hanging out here in the Panhandle.
Local boy. As I said, selling books worldwide, like 5 million books now, Michael?
Over 5 million. Yeah.
Did you say pinch me?
Wild. It really is. Yes.
Yeah. And tell our listeners how many series you have. You have Jim Jordan.
I have four different active series going. The John Jordan series is my main series, and there's 31 books in that so far.
Oh my gosh.
With another coming this year.
Is it the John Jordan series that is kind of being optioned for a possible TV series?
It is.
Well, you got enough material there.
Yes. Yeah. And that's what I want is a show that will take a book and do an entire season. I don't really like episodic mystery shows.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I like the model where they'll use the material and fill out an entire season with one main mystery. That's what I really want.
Nice.
And going back to what you said earlier, it's been 3 years since I've gotten to be with you lovely people, because it was on my birthday 3 years ago in February.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
So you got your John Jordan.
Yes. And then my Burke and Blade.
Burke and Blade.
Love which
that.
Is Panama City PIs.
Right.
Foster
mm-hmm.
brother and sister.
And for anybody who's come to this part of the world, it's so cool to be reading the book and go, like one of our listeners says, I can taste Thomas's donuts. Those kind of landmarks are in the book.
Yeah. It's so much fun. I have writer friends who are really known for a city, an area, and some of them will only use actual locations, real places. To me, that's a little too limiting. I like using real locations. I love really going to places that, you know, but I like being able to create things that, you know, I wish we had this or that. And especially if it's somewhere where a crime's going to happen, I need to be able to invent it.
Well,
so it's kind of like in the Superman universe. So this is Earth 2.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Alternate universe.
Yeah.
Michael's books are crime, drama, thrillers. I mean, they're edge-of-your-seat kind of thriller, page-turners. I got to tell you, and I know I've said this before, it blows me away that you're able to do different series and keep your people all straight and to write as much as you do. Do you write every single day?
Pretty much every day. I usually take a little time off in between novels to do research and, you know, but when I'm writing a novel, I write every day and a good bit every day. And then depending, you know, on what's going on, I may take 2 or 3 weeks off, a month at the most in between while I'm doing research and other things and catching up on all the things I let go while I was writing the previous novel.
Yeah.
And so, but then I'm just anxious to get back to it, you know, and I just love it so much.
Do you ever have it happen where you're doing research for a particular story, and as you go down a particular rabbit hole, your research takes a little turn and you realize, okay, this is going to take a whole lot longer, or you discover something you didn't realize, but it becomes germane to where you want to go?
Absolutely. And I'm a discovery writer. I don't outline.
Really?
And I don't, you know, I do a lot of prep, but it's all in my mind, you know, and it's I just amass information, get it ready, and then see how it comes out.
Do you sit at a typewriter?
A computer, a laptop. Okay. Yeah.
I envision you in a typewriter with paper, rolls of
yeah. No, when I first started writing, it was on a computer. I never have used a typewriter.
Really?
Yeah.
So you've been writing books for 3 decades.
I started in the summer of 1994. That's when I was born as a writer.
Wow.
And my first novel was published in 97.
Now, were you a high school teacher at the time you did your first?
No, I was prison chaplain.
You've been a high school teacher, you've been a college professor, a prison chaplain. You were the youngest in the Florida Department of Corrections,
yes,
right?
Yes, yeah, in the whole state
of Florida.
And people who have read Michael's John Jordan series will understand that there is a parts of your life that morph into John Jordan's life.
Very much so. Yeah, and I've a lot of writer friends who do series talk about they may not start that way, but over the course of a series, your characters get more and more like you, especially your main character, you know. And it's a way of exploring what matters to you and question your own morality and worldview. And, you know, it's just, I just love delving like that.
I know we've talked about this before, but for people that are new to our conversations, I have to again ask you, you do something that fascinates me. As I'm reading your stories, I get the sense that there are distinct personalities and you write in different voices for those different characters. How the heck do you get to a point where you can do that rather than just saying, okay, Joe went to the store, he met Mary, and Mary had a new car? No, you've got Joe's personality. He talks in his distinct way. Mary talks in her distinct way. She has. How do you do that?
Well, first of all, thank you. I really appreciate that. What I would like to be able to have happen is that if you only had the dialogue, if you had nothing else, no description, no narration, just dialogue, you could differentiate between each character, their personality, their education, their worldview, everything about them will come through just in the way they talk, just in the vocabulary, but also their just the use of language, the words they will and will not say, it's a conversation. You know, it really is a conversation.
Okay, you say you want to do that. When did you, as a writer, get to the point that you knew you could do that and you were comfortable and that these individual characters were talking to you and telling you what to say in their voice?
So early on in life, I was a creative, and I was looking for my medium. I looked at film. I thought for a while I was going to be a filmmaker. I studied film, acting, stage writing, music, various things. And all those prepared me for what was to come. But one of the things I wrote before I wrote novels was screenplays and stage plays. And that's nothing but dialogue.
Right.
And so I took to dialogue, to that conversation, more quickly than any other aspect of writing. And to this day, 30 years later, there's still scenes that I'll go through and write the entire scene, the conversation, and then have to go back and write descriptions, narrations,
wow,
plot information, because the for me the dialogue just sings. It just cooks.
Do you ever have a character say to you in your head, no, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't say that that way. No, we're not going down that road.
You definitely, you know, it in the flow of the scene, and that's what I think of. I don't think in terms of chapters. I think in terms of scenes. And in the flow of the scene, these people come to life for me, and I just listen. I feel like in a lot of ways I'm just listening and writing it down. Occasionally when I go back and I'm reading it, then I might say, that doesn't quite... Most of the time it would be, it doesn't quite land the way I thought it would, or doesn't communicate the way I wanted it to. But for the most part, it just... You know, if you have a good sense of the character, then for me, then I can hear how they talk.
Actually, if you have multiple personalities in you, you can turn that. Like, I'm sitting here going, dang, I have a hard time just talking. He's got all these people talking in his head.
You know, we've been talking about writing novels, which I've been doing for over 30 years. Songs I've been writing for about 3 years, you know. So I'm trying to get better with each one. And you asked earlier, did I write every day? When I am in between a novel is when I turn to songwriting. And so that gives me the opportunity to... So, like, right now, I have an inbox full of emails to myself of song ideas, titles, thoughts, and I am finishing up a novel. I thought I was going to finish it today. It'll probably be Monday or Tuesday for the first draft. And then as soon as I do that, then I'll turn to songwriting. But after the devastating hurricane in 2018, I reached out to my son and I said, you know, he was grown. And I said, do you still have that guitar we got you in high school? Cheap beater acoustic guitar. And I borrowed it from him and fell in love and just been playing every day since.
And you, in fact, played at a festival today, an art festival in downtown Panama City.
Yes. I was joined by some very good friends. Most of the times when I play, it's just me and acoustic, and I might have, you know, another singer. But today we had the full band. So it was Aaron Bearden on lead guitar, which was incredible. Scotty Belisle on drums. I was playing guitar, and Jasmine Allen was doing harmonies. And it was a perfect day.
Yeah.
And the festival is sidewalk chalk. So all of downtown Panama City is filled with artists making their art on the sidewalk and in the street. And then we're making music while they're doing that. And it was packed. There were so many people. It was incredible.
It is so cool. And I know we've talked before about the incredible artist community that goes on down here. That is just, it's wonderful.
It's thriving.
It really is thriving.
After Hurricane Michael, it just seemed like people said, dang it, we're staying here. And we're going to make this a good place to be. And now people are gravitating here to share their music and their art. And
I have to say, there's so many artistic leaders in our artistic community here. But today was largely because of Jason Kretzer, who runs the Panama City Center for the Arts and Bay Arts Alliance. He's a dear friend, and he is he's a wonderful artist in his own right. But what he does for our community is just incredible. Mm-hmm.
He's a comic book artist.
Yes.
Very successful one, too.
That's how we first encountered him years ago.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, wait a minute. Before we get completely away from this, because the blatant plug light is flashing, if people want to follow you, they go where?
You can go to my website, and if you sign up for my newsletter, you actually get 3 free books.
What?
But if you go to Amazon, you just go to Amazon under my name, Michael Lister.
And let me stop you. Lister, Lister. Because people are going, whoa, it's free. I've got to get this.
So the first book in each of my series that we've been talking about is free on Amazon right now for Kindle. So
wonderful.
They can get the ebook. And if you can add the audiobook for just a buck or two and actually have a professional read it to you. So
you should read your own books.
You know, I have so often... I get to the point and I say, do I want to spend the next several months reading a book or do I want to write another book? And guess what the answer is? It's always, I want to write another book.
Yeah.
How many books did you write last year?
This is, I don't know if we're going to get into what's next for me, but that's
no, we will.
Okay.
Oh, we will.
So this is what. So this has been the previous year has been my lowest output in perhaps my entire career.
Okay.
Because of the change that is that's taken place and direction for me. So, so yeah. So I've completed two books. Mm-hmm. Neither have come out yet. You know, my two most recent ones, they're in the pipeline for later this year.
Very cool. Well, you've got a couple of books that are based on true crimes.
Yes.
Now, so one of them is your latest book, right?
Yes. So
the John Jordan.
I have my two newest books, one in each series, the John Jordan series and the Burke and Blade series. And so for the John Jordan series, it's the Bloodstained Bay. And several years ago, seeing that I was going to be writing these long-running series, looking for inspiration, I turned to A Life of True Crime. And I was like,
you want to rephrase that, Michael?
Chaplin becomes a criminal.
Exactly. I do wonder if I could commit the perfect crime. You know, you think if you spend all this time studying it, you should be able to. But there's just so much there, and we're in a renaissance of true crime.
Yeah.
Podcasts, books, but podcasts especially, documentaries. And so the one thing that I kept seeing in all of the true crime coverage is all the people with their theories. And I said, those are red herrings. Those are, you know, just so much to work with. So I turned to true crime for inspiration, and several of my more recent books have been inspired by true crime. So the Bloodstained Bay, the new John Jordan book, is inspired by the Lacey Peterson case.
Mm-hmm.
And Day and Night, the new Burke and Blade series, a book in that series, is based on the Ellen Greenberg case, which is, you know, heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And, I mean, all of these cases are, but that one especially is. And I'd love to, when we have time, I'd love to tell you what.
And we probably have more books by Michael Lister than anybody else in our collection.
We had a friend that stayed at our house in our guest room. He said, yes. Who is this Michael Lister guy? There's like a stack of books next to the bed. And I said, there's something for you to read, right?
Yeah. For people just joining us, you should go to michaellister.com.
Yes. So if you like mysteries, I'm your guy. So go to michaellister.com and you get free books. The first in each series is free. So check it out.
And you were about to start telling us about this new series and how you came across this idea.
Well, actually, I want to know about the two latest books in your series, your John Jordan series. You've got the book that's based on the Lacey Peterson crime. And then Day and Night is your Burke and Blade series. Again, blows my mind. And that's the latest book in that series. And that's based on another crime.
Yeah, the Ellen Greenberg case. Fiance, young woman, leaves school early because of a snow day, goes to her apartment. Her fiance is there. He goes down to work out in the condo gym and returns to their apartment 30 minutes later, and she has been stabbed to death 20 times.
Oh, my.
Including in the back of the neck. And the medical examiner called it suicide.
No.
Ruled it suicide. Subsequent investigation shows it's not possible to do what the wounds she experienced in the back of her neck. And one of them would have incapacitated her. She could not do any of the other stabs. So, the moment I heard that, I was like, I have to write about this. So what I do in these cases, I do all this research, and then in this case, I moved it to Panama City Beach, and it's a condo on the beach where this happens.
Mm-hmm.
And so my detective his name is Burke, Lucas Burke. He is hired to investigate this crime, and the sister of the victim who hires him tells him, I have not been able to go back into that condo since this happened. It's nothing has been touched. Nothing has been changed. You can stay in that condo while you investigate this crime.
Oh.
So I love the book. I just am so happy with how it turned out. And, you know, I write crime thrillers, but every one of my books has mysteries because I like whodunits. I really want I like essentially studying the mystery of life and all its complexities and the way it manifests, and in the mystery thriller novel is one of the ways to do that. And so I want there to be so many unknowns and twists, and then when the reveal happens, I want the reader to be surprised, and it somehow also seem inevitable. It's like this is the, and I get emails, letters from readers all the time saying, yeah, "You got me, man! You trick, you yes. know." I've read so many of your books, and you always get me because it's a craft. And who I studied to learn the most was Agatha Christie. Nobody's ever done it better than her. Not even close.
How do you avoid the trap of you're going to do a series of novels, but the guy meets the girl, they get together, they break up, they go their separate ways, they come back together. Are they going to stay together? No, there's another problem. Okay, well, whoops,
the cliches.
They solve it, and they get back together. How do you avoid a formula as you are doing a series? That's what I'm
saying. Yeah, a lot of, you know, every genre has conventions, and I like playing against the conventions. And, you know, what you were saying earlier, you know, about the Dark Knight on Panama City Beach, there's a long history of lone wolf detectives. No, they're not attached to anyone. My detectives, my characters have families, extended families. They are close and connected with friends and families. They have long-lasting, significant other relationships. And so that's just one of the ways in which I play against the convention. And, you know, you have to study the rules of anything in order to really be able to break them. And so I try to study them and know them and then play with them.
Do you ever have family members come to you and say, "I just read your book, and the way you described that person, I think you've got me. It sounds just like me. Were you thinking of me when you wrote that?"
I do get that, especially when I first started. Yeah. And when I first started, it wasn't just family. It was the entire small town where I live.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I was perhaps the only published author in this. I live in a micro town. You know, we're talking less than 3,000 people. Well, when your first book comes out, everybody reads it. You know, anybody who can read, reads it. And I had a number of people come to me and say, "Yeah, that's me. That I know you were talking." I was like, I promise you, fun of this is making this up. You know, it's I'm not a biographer. I'm not telling your story. You know,
what about names, though? Isn't it hard coming up with names that flow and work? And
it is, and I try to use names that reflect the area. So North Florida, you'll find a lot of common last names that are here and not other places that make their way into
my point. Yeah. So you get the flavor of the area. And I think you've said before that this area of Florida has really been overlooked. So if people come here, they might be surprised. Like when they're driving to your town in Wewahitchka, that may be the darkest road I have ever been on in my life.
It is absolutely the darkest road.
And then when we drove that road during day, and then we see this body of water with these crazy trees sticking up out of the water, I get goosebumps
Deadhead
just talking
cypresses.
About it.
Yes.
Yeah. And for people who have been here, we're talking about there's a road. It goes from Callaway to Wewahitchka. It is the darkest road.
Straight, flat,
in the
empty,
universe.
Dark.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. Scary.
22 miles.
Scary. It's the longest 22 miles.
If you had autopilot, you could set it and you could just go to sleep because it's straight.
The body of water I mentioned were the cypress, the dead cypress.
The dead lakes.
And that's kind of legendary in this area.
It is, yeah. And it was formed by rivers being dammed, and they formed these lakes, and then they killed the trees that were there, you know, on the property. And so these are ancient cypress trees, but they are submerged.
Crazy.
You know, partially submerged in this body of water.
But it's part of
they killed the trees.
It's part of the color that you get in Michael's books.
We want to segue to Los Angeles.
Yes, because, Michael, you're good friends with another very successful crime writer, Michael Connelly.
Yes.
And he invited you out to L.A.
He did.
This is kind of like a dream, right? This was on your bucket list.
It was, you know, something I really wasn't even... I wasn't on my bucket list because I hadn't even thought of it.
Really?
You know? Yeah. But he and I share a lot of things, crime fiction, you know, being one of them, obviously. But another is we are Los Angeles Laker fans.
Oh.
So last year he said, I've got some great tickets, and it's to the Lakers Warriors. So you can see LeBron and Steph and Luka in the same night. And I was like, you know, sign me up. I'm on my way. And I just went for that. We went to a couple different shoots of studios for The Lincoln Lawyer, the Netflix series. Mm-hmm. We ate at Musso and Frank's. It was just an incredible experience. And that's all I went for. I did not go out there for research. I did not go out there for any other reason. But something happened. And that was after 30 years of writing books strictly set in Florida in the South, my new series is based in Los Angeles. And what happened was I felt at home the moment I stepped off the plane. I had more than any other city in the world, I had spent time in this city before I ever got there, in Chinatown. In Heat, in the pages of Raymond Chandler, it just everything was familiar. Everything was and so inspiring. I just can't explain how inspiring it was. And you know, I've done a lot of traveling for book events and different things. I was in New Orleans just a few months ago. You know, I've been to Chicago and New York, and I'm always inspired. But never like this. Never have I said, I am going to write a new series that is set in this city.
Is it
going to
be present day? Or are you going to?
It is. Yes,
oh,
it
great.
Is. And the protagonist is a crime writer. And he is an outsider to Los Angeles and, you know, fish out of water, experiencing everything for the first time. And yet, similar to the experience I had, it's familiar. He's like, in some ways, I think I've been here before. Mm-hmm. So when I go to Echo Park, I see Jake Gittes, you know, from Chinatown, following the person he is detecting. So it just every aspect of the experience in the city was so very rich, and so this past year, my entire creative focus has been on, you know, writing and preparing to launch this new series.
How long did it take you from the time you thought, okay, I want to do a Los Angeles-based series, to coming up with, okay, and here's who is going to be the main protagonist, here are some of the other characters. How long did that development take?
So the idea of writing a series set there did not even occur to me until I got back home. So while I was there,
you're just having a good time.
And once I got back home, it didn't take long until I was just like, I have to do this. And then, of course, the first thought was, I'll take an existing character and send him to Los Angeles. And the more I thought about it, I was like, no, this needs to be its own thing. And what if the crime writer becomes the detective? And so he is detecting, but he's also talking about writing, talking about film and inspirations and the ways in which fact and fiction blur in situations like this. So
do you have a name for your
novel is called Crime Writer.
Good.
And the second one is called Double Take.
Oh, good. Yeah. Now, you have a double exposure, which is how we got to meet you with that wonderful book.
And by the way, if you want to get the best introduction to Michael Lister, read Double Exposure.
Thank you.
Yeah, gosh.
By the way, how do John Jordan and Burke and Blade feel about this Los Angeles series?
we're gonna find out real soon.
It's going to be a rumble in the streets.
their creator is very much the protagonist of this book, so... Bella.
And we also have to have
speak up.
We have to have you hypnotized to take you into a past life to see what you were doing when you were living in L.A.
Right, that's right.
Fighting crime or something like that. Because that's really that's a very powerful feeling when you feel like, you know what? I'm comfortable here. This is good.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
It gives me goosebumps again.
It's an experience. I've never had it quite like that.
Yeah.
Where you're like, this is new, and simultaneously this is familiar, and I've been here before. You know, I think about Mulholland Drive. Think about the work of David Lynch. And that music, soundtrack.
To you.
You know, we rode up Mulholland Drive and down several times, and every time I was hearing that music and experiencing the scenes from that film. And again, Chinatown, different ones. It was incredible. It really was. I've just never had an experience like it.
And there are so many things out there. Like, I will never forget when we were out there and the first time we saw the Capitol Records Tower.
Yes.
It's like, oh, okay.
It's real.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that was like an emotional moment.
Right. Yeah. When I got to the very first, when he picked me up from the airport, LAX, drove me to Los Angeles Center Studios, where the Lincoln Logger was being filmed, and we you know, met the cast, and we're doing the filming, and then from there we went to Musso and Frank, you know, was just featured in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood,
mm-hmm.
and you have Brad Pitt and Leonardo,
right.
and that whole scene, I was just seeing it unfold as I was sitting there eating in this place, and we ate in Raymond Chandler's booth. So Michael Connelly, who is considered to be the heir apparent of Raymond Chandler, I'm sitting with him in Raymond Chandler's booth.
That is really cool.
But now, have you been to In-N-Out Burger?
Yes. That was on the list, and the next day for lunch, I was like, we have to go there, and it was incredible.
Okay. Before we run out of time, you have written about movies, you love movies, you've got a book about movies. What's the one movie out there today that you say you have to see it?
Oh, that's such a great question.
Have you seen The Bride? We talked about that at the top of the show.
I haven't seen it yet. I've read reviews, heard some people that I really trust about it, and saying some very positive things, and then also saying there's a whole lot in this packed into this, you know.
Yeah.
So, is this thing on? Is my recommendation. Just saw it recently.
Okay.
A couple going through a breakup.
Mm-hmm.
Seems to be headed towards divorce. He just wants to go in somewhere to get a drink, and there's a cover charge unless you do stand up. Mm-hmm. So he says, I'll do a stand up set.
Yeah. Based on a true story.
Yeah, it's so good. So
I'm
good.
I'm glad to hear
that. The writing, the acting, it's incredible.
Well, we saw a fascinating interview with him. I can't think of who the actor's name is, but on a British show.
The comedian that
is
the guy that the movie is based on.
Yes.
Which is, he just says, pinch me. You know, I'm just a bloke doing comedy.
Yes. So good.
I'm glad to hear that. Mm. Good. Well, there's so many things that we could talk to Michael about, because the man is, again, I'm in awe of the way his mind works and the fact that he can put out as many excellent books, and got this whole new series that's coming out. And you guys, if you're not reading Michael Lister's books, you've got to go to michaellister.com. Check out his books. You can get the first books in his series, the John Jordan series and the Burke and Blade. I love the alliteration there,
thank
too.
Thank you.
Do you know anybody with those names? Have you run into them and go, because Blade's a cool name.
Dude, I have not, but James Lee Burke, one of the greatest crime writers to ever live, has been an inspiration of mine for 20-something years
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to also take a little sidetrack. You need to get a copy of Michael's Thunder Beach novel.
Yes. Mm. It was my dad's favorite.
So good. Thank you.
Because it's all about Bike Week when it comes to Panama City Beach. And my dad was reading and saying, this is exactly the way it is. As he's really pointing at the book. Okay.
You have time for one more recommendation?
Yes.
Are we out of time?
Sure.
So one of the best true crime podcasts going right now is also by Michael Connelly. And it's called Killer in the Code. Oh. And it is someone from here who has broken the Zodiac Code. And it is fascinating how he links the Black Dahlia killer and Zodiac. It's incredible. It's shocking. It's mind-blowing. I cannot I could not recommend it more highly. Killer in the Code podcast.
Awesome.
With the amount of research that you do for your novels and the amount of novels that you base on true cases, have you ever been contacted by police authorities saying, in your research, did you discover anything we should be aware of?
So I have been contacted by family members saying, would you please look into this a little more? We feel like there's more here, you know, that kind of thing. With law enforcement, it's mostly me interviewing them, talking to the, you know, asking. And I have some great resources that, you know, really are so generous with their expertise and their time. You know, I have a retired judge who helps me with legal issues. I have an active sheriff who helps me with law enforcement questions. And, you know, so, and then I have a forensics expert. And you can Google it. You can see what AI says. You can see what the books say. But talking to someone who's doing it day in and day out, there's no replacement for that.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time tonight.
Thank you so much for having me.
For your books and all the good stuff that you're putting out. You're in an excellent place, Michael.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
And assuming we stay on the air, it will not be another 3 years before you're back on with us.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thanks.
So make sure to check out michaellister.com and also check out Michael's YouTube channel and all the places that you can find Michael Lister. We are going to segue to the world of cyberspace. And we are now joined by the man who is the Director of Educational Technology at the Keck School of Medicine of USC, and he is out on the left coast. That would be your doctor, Patrick Crispin. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, woo-hoo! Patrick.
Woohoo! And by the way, I too have felt comfortable in Los Angeles.
In fact, we were talking with Michael about you off the air, and he may want to tap into your expertise about Los Angeles as he is doing some research for his Los Angeles-based novels.
Happy to help him.
So how are you doing, Patrick?
We are just actually getting over colds. Joseph had a cold that he gave to Christine. Christine gave it to me. I gave it back to Christine.
Oh, God.
So I don't know what's going on with this cold this cold season, but it's been like
Well, you've had crazy weather. It's been 90 degrees, then it's been 50, and it of course it's crazy everywhere.
Yeah, it was 74 today. It's going to be 88 tomorrow. So
Wow. Well, I've got to tell you that there is a topic that we're going to talk about tonight that we're actually getting people that are texting saying, "Please, Patrick is a Mac guy. He's got to talk about this new Mac." And this is big news. It broke last week, right?
This is really, really, really exciting. It's not often that you get excited about new technology that's being announced. But we talked, you know, at the turn of the year that computers are getting so expensive just because AI data centers are eating up all the chips. So the cost of getting any new technology is really, really, really expensive. Back in November, I said that Apple has been working on a low-cost laptop. Now, low-cost and Apple, those two words don't ever go together. But they really wanted to compete with Chromebooks. They wanted to go after the school market, and they were looking at something that was probably going to be powered by an iPhone-class chip. So not an M chip, but actually an A chip that you would find in the mobile phones. Well, it turns out that happened. This week, Apple announced a brand new entry-level 13-inch MacBook Neo. Base model has a 256 gigs of storage, 8 gigs of RAM, and it is, again, for a Mac, $599. That's it. $599.
And
if you're a student, the student price is $499, and all you need to do to get the student discount is to take a kid with you when you buy one of these things. But $499 for a brand new Mac. This is literally the most affordable laptop Apple has ever made. They really, really, really do want to go after the Chromebook market and the entry-level Mac or the PC market. Again, it's an entry-level model. This is sort of the budget MacBook. There is an upgrade. You can get 512 gigs of storage and 8 gigs of RAM with Touch ID. It's $699, $599 for students.
Wow.
It's available this coming week. The colors are actually kind of like the old IMAX with like,
oh, cool.
Like silver and blush pink and citrus neon yellow and indigo dark blue.
That's
They're
smart.
Really cool looking.
Yeah.
The specs for this, honestly, they're just fantastic. It's a liquid retina display, 16 hours of battery life, which for a Mac is, you know, fantastic. And it's an A18 Pro, so it's the same chip as an iPhone 16. Aluminum case, so it's not plastic. Mm. But there are, of course, some naysayers out there saying, well, but it's only 256 gigs of storage, or it's only 8 gigs of RAM. Yeah, it's $599.
Isn't it important to emphasize, this is not intended to be for a power user.
No. This is really, if you're going to be sitting there and just browsing the web, maybe watching Netflix, maybe writing some emails, maybe doing a couple pictures and stuff like that, this is the ideal laptop for you. If you're going to be creating movies like you're, you know, using Final Cut Pro, this is not going to be powerful enough for you. But you don't. The reality is, if you're just looking for an entry-level computer, brand new, and it's like, I don't have a lot of money, I don't want to get a used computer, for $499, if you can find a kid, is the best deal out there. This is a no-brainer. I'm really, really excited by this.
I heard a conversation earlier this week, and one of the people who was, I forget who they were, but they were a technology expert, and they said they were fascinated by this, not only the price, but the idea that this iPhone chip has more technology than was used in the first space flight to the moon.
Oh, easily. And again, you sit there and go, okay, it's just an iPhone chip. Is it powerful enough? Yeah, it is. For most things you do on your computer, you really only need one processor. This is going to be, you know, five cores. It can handle most of the things you're going to do on your computer, and it's going to do it because it's written on code and hardware that was originally designed for the iPhone. It's going to sip battery. It's not going to eat the battery like a non-optimized phone and chip. It really is a great deal.
And again, for people who are attached to their iPad, this is bigger than your iPad at 13 inches. So if now you're to the point where your glasses just aren't doing it for you, trying to see the print on your iPad, maybe this is the next step up.
So is it basically the size of a Chromebook?
It's the size of a Chromebook. It's actually the size of, there's now a 13-inch iPad. Although, I got to be honest, the 13-inch iPad is more expensive than this. This is a better deal. This is because it comes with a keyboard and everything, and it's everything all in one.
Yeah, I looked up and I was like, wait a minute. The iPad is more expensive than the Neo? Are they readily available, Patrick? Is that what you're hearing?
They're going to be everywhere come Wednesday. There is going to be a line for these things. I think this is going to be one of the better products they've made for a very, very long time. Remember, again, it's an entry-level laptop. So if you're looking for lots and lots of RAM, this isn't the laptop for you. Right. You're thinking about the wrong thing. This has a physical trackpad, so it's not the fake haptic trackpad that we've been using on the iPad or the MacBook Pros. You're not going to notice a difference. Honestly, I'm thinking of getting one for Joseph.
I want to know, because you said something about Apple wanted to regain the education market. When did Apple lose it? Because we're sitting in a college that there was a time when we came in to speak to the radio class, and all of the kids were sitting behind these ginormous Apple computers.
there was not a Windows computer to be
anywhere.
Had.
So when did that happen?
At the school level, and really it's in the K-12 environment, the kindergarten through 12th grade, it's really just for budget, and it turns out Chromebooks are cheaper for an institution to purchase lots and lots of hundreds and hundreds of Chromebooks, which are not the most powerful of computers. This is actually going to now be in that same price range as a Chromebook with an aluminum case, not a plastic case. Anybody who has a anybody who has kids who have Chromebooks realize those cases are not the strongest. and so I know that there are a lot of college students who are using Macs, and that's very, mm-hmm. very popular. But when it comes to K-12 education, it's really Chromebook is the default for schools. And I think that's going to change over the next year.
I did not know that. Patrick, a listener named George, who's a regular, says he wants to know if you think buying the previous MacBook is a good idea, and do you think the prices will be dropped with the new Neo hitting the market?
I do, in sort of. You're not going to see significant drops on like the new M5 MacBook Pros, the Pro and MacBook powered MacBooks, just because those are brand new. You are going to see drops on the M4s, the M3s, the M2s. It would be hard to find M1s around anymore. But yes, previous year's models are going to be available. On the Neo, it's a brand new market segment for Apple. So from the entry-level perspective, you're not going to see anything that's going to be close to $699 or $599 for this, right, or $499 if you're an educator or a student. But for the other models, yeah, I actually do strongly recommend. It's a really good value if the specs for what you're looking at actually meet the price, and you're getting a good model with a good warranty. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Another listener from a 608 area code asks whether or not the Neo would address his low vision concerns.
Yes, but it's not necessarily the Neo. It's the Apple ecosystem. Apple has embraced low vision from day one. And they are really strongly built in with vision accessibility tools, voice over screen readers, Zoom, display and text customization, accessibility reader. There's a magnifier that I think is there or coming soon. There's text reading. It's just all built into it. So the hardware that you buy, whether it's a MacBook Pro or a Neo or whatever, it really doesn't matter. Mac OS is what provides the accessibility features, and yes, it's built in automatically.
Speaking of vision accessibility, am I wrong, or wasn't it one of the most recent versions of Chrome that also allowed for a reader if you click, I forget where you click, but I believe I saw in one of the recent versions of Chrome, you can now have Chrome read to you as you're going over a website?
I believe so. And that's actually becoming standard on a lot of different tools where there is the text-to-speech feature built into it. And you're seeing more and more with the AI tools. The AI is now able to interact with you with voice where you can speak to it and it can speak to you.
You have to pardon me. I'm taking a left turn on you. So I went to ChatGPT the other day for a recipe. Oh, my goodness. If I had followed it, it would have been so funny.
Yes.
It called for a cup of cornstarch, which, in fact, it needed a tablespoon.
Oh, wow.
So I thought, well, that doesn't seem quite right. So let me go back and get out of ChatGPT and see what else is available. And I went, whoa, I'm glad I didn't go there.
Weren't you in some Facebook group and somebody was talking about they followed this recipe from ChatGPT and it tasted horrible?
And it was really kind of funny because people started sharing their own experiences. And, you know, if you've got time, you can get crazy and see what ChatGPT will do for you. And
you have to Facebook, you have to trust ChatGPT, but you also have to check ChatGPT.
Yes.
It's sometimes going to hallucinate and make things up, and you have to have at least some sort of foundational knowledge, or you're going to get a cup of cornstarch, which is, I can't even imagine what that would be like.
So ChatGPT is the classic trust, but verify.
Everything, yes.
Yeah, but speaking of Facebook, I don't know if you have any thoughts on this, but Johnny and I have noticed something with Facebook. Mostly within the past 2 weeks, you will see a Facebook post, and it will have large print.
So it's white on a colored background to get your attention.
And it says, blah, 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 now is the time for all good men to, and then there's, you know, see more. So you click on it, and a blank screen comes up. And this is any time I have seen one of these big print posts on Facebook from anybody, and you click on that, and the next thing you get is a blank screen.
It may be that they're trying to farm engagement, and for some reason or other, the folks at Facebook have caught them, and you were clicking on something to go to a different page so that they can count the click, but Facebook's algorithm says, no, this just seems really scammy, so I'm not going to let you do it.
Right.
So it didn't take the link down. It's still there, but they're just taking the monetization away from the person who's trying to trick you.
I think that's it. Because
that's my guess.
I think it's a very good guess, because I'm thinking about the instances that I've been frustrated with that, and it's crossed my mind, I wonder why they did it that way. Oh, to get me to go in and click.
I've seen so many stories where it's like, okay, here's this latest story. Click on this, and it's like, okay, well, here's this here, and it shows you. It's like, okay, you have to click one more time to get the story, and it's like, no, I'm not doing it anymore.
Good. Make that your rule of thumb. Just don't do it. Go someplace else. Get busy with something else, because sometimes those are bad people trying to suck you into something. In fact, I contacted you last week because a friend was freaking out because she thought that she had been hacked because she was on Facebook, and she looked at a page that I had shared with her, and when she looked at it, she tried to get away from it, but it kept following her, and you had to talk her off the ledge, and I appreciate that. Because really what you said was, if you didn't give anybody your passwords, if you've got two-factor authentication, which she does on Facebook, relax. But she was like crazy livid.
Well, and I don't know if you saw a message from a former boss of ours today saying that she was apologizing that her Facebook page had been hacked. And the first thing I did is I sent a message to her and I said, change your password now.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And turn on two-factor authentication.
Yeah, do not be using Facebook unless you have two-factor authentication set up, because there's just so much weird stuff going on.
Well, there's so many different websites that try to trick you into, logged out of Facebook. Let me log you back in. It's not actually the Facebook login page. It's a site stealing your username and password. You have two-factor authentication. Even if they have username and password, they still can't get in because they don't know you have a two-factor.
And if you see something on Facebook and it looks familiar, it's a very good chance that somebody has stolen pictures, content from another page, and they've put it up. And now you're getting this, and you're going to click on it, and that's what they're looking for. They want you to click.
You had some, in the show notes, some things about what to do when a friend's Facebook page gets hacked?
Absolutely. So if you have somebody whose Facebook page gets hacked, what ends up happening is the bad guys then go in and say, okay, I have a Facebook page. I have all these people who are following me. I'm going to get in touch with them and say, hey, I've got new information for you. Come and click on it. And you click on it, and it turns out to be a fake message that's sent out to all the followers that says something like, your computer is infected, or your Facebook account has been compromised, or is this you in the video? Mm-hmm. Every one of those messages is absolutely fake, not true. It's not a security alert. It's not coming for Facebook. It's just pure social engineering. Somebody's trying to get you to click on a link and possibly compromise your account or your computer. So what do you do when you get one of those messages saying your computer is infected or something's about to bad? Stop. Don't click on anything in a message. Don't click on the links. Don't click on the buttons. Don't click on the attachments. Don't click on the security prompts. Close your browser. Close the Facebook app. Just lift your hands off the keyboard. You're not minimizing, you're not switching tabs, you're getting out of it, you're quitting, closing everything. If the pop-ups appear, don't interact with them. They're really designed to trap you. And it really only if you enter your password again or download something or install a browser extension or approve a malicious login are you going to get into issues and problems. If you don't do those, you're probably fine. What you need to do then is open up the Facebook using the Facebook app, not the website, the Facebook app. And you get into the Facebook app and there's nothing wrong there, this is just some sort of fake thing. You might want to change your password and make sure two-factor authentication is turned on. You can also, and I did put this in the show notes, log out of all other sessions under security settings. And that basically shuts down most of the follow-on attacks. The big thing is hackers are really trying to scare you and to get you to be afraid and to feel mm-hmm. that it's urgent and I've got to jump and I've got to do something right now. Real alerts don't trap you with a pop-up. Just slow down, close it, and move on with your life.
Okay. We're talking with Dr. Patrick Crispin, talking tech.
Patrick.
Should we go to the Pentagon,
yes.
Patrick?
We move now to the Pentagon.
I'm really fascinated by this Anthropic story.
Yeah, and it's an interesting story. I'm going to try to be as neutral as possible and just kind of give you the absolute facts of what's going on.
Okay.
If you've been in the AI space for a while, or even just watching it remotely, you know about OpenAI's ChatGPT, and you probably heard about Google Gemini and maybe even Microsoft Copilot. Those really are the big three names in consumer AI. But there is another player, the company called Anthropic, and they make a platform called Claude. And until recently, Claude had this kind of unique position in the U.S. government. During the Biden administration, and even continuing in the Trump administration, Anthropic negotiated an agreement with what was then called the Department of Defense to allow Claude, Anthropic Claude, to operate in classified environments. What that meant is Claude was the only commercial AI model authorized inside of the Pentagon's classified cloud. So it's a pretty important thing. This is big. Government version, which is sometimes called Claude Gov, became popular with defense personnel because, it just worked. It was easy to use, and it didn't require a lot of extra coding. In fact, Claude has been integrated into Palantir's Maven smart system, which is used with intelligence analysis and target prioritization. And there was a reporting I saw last week, which said that Anthropic-assisted systems were actually used to rapidly analyze and prioritize about 1,000 targets during the first 24 hours of military operations in Iran. So this is a big, important tool being used. It's inside the private cloud for the DoD. However, Anthropic sort of has this standing agreement, and it's sort of their culture. And basically, their agreement with the government said, one, Anthropic Claude cannot be used for mass surveillance of Americans. And two, Anthropic Claude can't be used to control fully autonomous lethal weapons. In other words, it can't be connected to something that is used to identify, track, and kill humans without some human in the middle saying, yes or no, you can go and kill that person. Mm-hmm. So this is really sort of the way that Anthropic's corporate AI safety policies are run. The Trump administration over the last couple of weeks said, we're not really too happy with that, because their argument is the Department of Defense, now called the Department of War, not a private vendor. It really should be determining how military technology is deployed. It shouldn't be some company saying you can or can't do this. The military gets to decide what they want and what they need to do. Mm-hmm. So Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth basically warned Anthropic that unless it allowed unrestricted use, the department could remove it from the defense supply chain and even invoke the Defense Production Act. And they did that. Back on Thursday, the DOD, or now DOW, formally designated Anthropic what they call a supply chain risk. And what that means is Anthropic is now excluded from certain government contracts and it can't be used in defense-related supply chains. There is a fellow that I follow, and he actually has a really interesting quote, and it's kind of, I'm just going to read it out loud, but it's like War Secretary Pete Hegseth has gone even further, saying he would prevent all military contractors from having any commercial relations with Anthropic. He almost surely lacks this power, but a plain reading of this would suggest that Anthropic would not be able to use any cloud computing nor purchase chips of its own, since all relevant companies do business with the military. Wow. And that several Anthropic largest investors, NVIDIA, Google, and Amazon, would be forced to divest. Essentially, the United States Secretary of War announced his intention to commit corporate murder. Why this matters and why you should be paying attention to the story. This is obviously going to go before the courts, but it raises fundamental questions. Can private AI companies impose usage restrictions on the military? Can you come up with a product and say, okay, I'm going to sell it to you, but you can't use it unless you agree to these certain rules?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. Can the federal government compel private companies to remove those regulations? We don't know. And where is the line between national security authority and corporate autonomy? There are going to be legal challenges for this. This is going to head for judicial review, but this is a big thing. And AI, we talked about AI being a big story. Now it's AI inside the Pentagon being mm-hmm. used mm-hmm. in ways that we don't know. And it's an interesting time.
You're right. This is a story to be followed. And
Anthropic is going to fight this because they were the only game in town.
Right. If I'm understanding it correctly, Anthropic isn't saying you can't do this. They're saying you can't do this with our product.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now, Anthropic, as I said, they're going to fight this because you don't go from being the big deal to suddenly just you're out of here. That's devastating.
And not only can you not be in the Pentagon, but all of the other companies who do business with you have to stop doing business with
they
you.
They can't play
like
with you.
NVIDIA, right. Google, and Amazon. And if you know anything about the way the finance of the AI world works, there's a lot of round-trip financing where NVIDIA goes and invests in Anthropic. Anthropic then goes and buys mm-hmm. NVIDIA chips.
Mm-hmm.
And then Google invests in Anthropic. And then Google is receiving money from Anthropic for storage and server space on Google servers. And the same thing for Amazon Web Services. All these things are sort of inbred, and you can't kind of break it apart as easily as this. So it's an interesting thing. I mean, again, basically, Anthropic is saying Claude can't be used for mass surveillance of Americans, and Claude can't be used to control fully autonomous lethal weapons. And the Trump administration is saying, you can't tell us what you can do. This is going to be mm-hmm. up to us in a time of war. We shouldn't have these handcuffs on us. And there are merits on both sides.
Well,
and if you're glazing over all this, do not worry about copying it down. Patrick has been nice enough to send us his show notes, and his show notes will appear on our blog within about the next 48 hours.
One comment from the administration came out today from Emil Michael, who's the Undersecretary of Defense for Research and Engineering. And he said quite simply that the CEO of Anthropic is dishonest and has a God complex. That's some pretty heavy charges.
But doesn't every CEO have a God complex? I don't know how you get to be a CEO of a tech company and not have a God complex.
Good point, Patrick. We are, if you hadn't guessed, we're talking technology. And as Steve said, don't freak out. All of this is available, thanks to Patrick, in our show notes.
Partly personal, in a few weeks, so we're going to be meeting Patrick and Christine and Joseph out in the Grand Canyon for Joseph's birthday. But, Patrick, my question is, are you kids heading to Chicago with Joseph somewhere around June?
It turns out, no, we're not. It will probably be July, but we will be watching Chicago from afar longingly.
And if you're going to be in downtown, Patrick.
If you're going to be in downtown Chicago, June 5th, 6th, or 7th, I want to give you a heads up. You are going to see tens of thousands of people walking around staring at their phones. And it's not a tech glitch. It's Pokemon Go Fest. The official Pokemon Go Fest is taking over Grant Park. So ticket holding players, you have to buy a ticket to go to this, are going to be flying in Chicago from around the world. And for 3 days, the entire city of Chicago is going to become the game board. And people are going to be around Grant Park and the streets and neighborhoods throughout Chicago, creating and going through sort of these in-game challenges and trying to capture rare Pokemon that are only available on their phones during the Pokemon Go Fest. So if you see large groups of people kind of walking into traffic and they're in coordinated clusters, phones up, and someone shouting at their top of the lung, "I got a shiny," that's what's going on.
That's not code.
Joseph and I will not be there because Joseph will have just gotten out of school, but we will be watching from afar. This is a big thing. You're going to have lots and lots of people coming. They're going to do it in Tokyo and Chicago. And then it'll be globally like a week later. But you guys, people from all over the world will come to this.
Yeah.
My strongest memory of the last time was, Joseph was interested, but you were kind of
goofy.
Yeah, I might have gotten a little over.
So Pokemon was big news in Chicago last week because that was announced. Yes. And the Field Museum's website was taxed and at some points was crashed because tickets for the Pokemon fossil exhibit went up and people were in a virtual line literally all day to get their tickets. And I don't know anything. I mean, I'm thinking of Sue, the T-Rex at Field Museum. I'm not thinking Pokemon, but it's the Pokemon fossil show. Do you know anything about that?
We were following that actually earlier this year, and I think this is the first time it's been outside of Japan. And you go in and you get to see some of the most popular Pokemon and sort of cutaways of what they look like with their bones inside of the Pokemon.
As in fossils of Pokemon.
And
why?
You know, honestly, who knows?
Who knows? Have some respect for Pokemon, Patrick.
Oh,
I play Pokemon Go, and I never got into the card games, and I'm not sure I want to go see fossils of a Bidoof, but you know.
Of
a Bidoof.
That was one of my favorite groups in the 70s.
So this happened. Julian, did you get your tickets for the Field Museum? It opens on April 11th, right after your birthday. It'd be a great way for you to celebrate.
Yeah, it would be a great birthday gift, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, now he's hinting.
Hint. I was interested, and sure enough, the site, I couldn't even access it for a little bit.
Oh, I know. I have a friend that's
so many people.
She wanted to surprise her boys and get tickets, and I'm not kidding you when I tell you she posted she sat for 8.5 hours. I'm like, okay, for Taylor Swift tickets, I get it.
I don't
get it for Pokemon Fossil.
People who are not into Pokemon, like me, really don't understand that this is a, oh boy, big deal.
Worldwide,
and millions of people from all over the planet say, yeah, give me more.
And isn't it like 30 years old now, right, Patrick?
I think so, yeah. This is their 30th anniversary. It's 20, and it's the 10-year anniversary of Pokemon Go, which is the mobile app.
So, Julian, it's been your whole life, right? Since you were one.
No, literally. One of my first experiences, believe it or not, with reading anything was the original Pokemon on Game Boy.
Really? Well, that's kind of cool when you think about that. But were you into the cards or...
The cards, not so much. Mostly the games and the show. And
okay. So much else. Like Patrick and Joseph.
Yeah.
I'm still thinking of us walking in on a friend who got into it with her boys. She was doing a radio show. She invited us in to do her show. And she said, come, sit in my lap. I want to pretend like I just grabbed another Pokemon. I'm like, okay.
What?
I'm not sure why I'm doing this, but okay. Take my picture sitting in your lap.
I
didn't
go that far.
Yeah, I know. It was very strange. Okay.
Before we run out of time, we should talk a little bit about This Week in Hacks.
Absolutely. The thing is, and we've said this over and over again, criminals are always looking for ways to trick you into handing over your passwords. And one of their ways to do that is by sending you official looking emails, and they pretend to be Microsoft, or they pretend to be Google, or they pretend to be Facebook, or the IRS, somebody that you have a relationship with that is official. And the message is always something like, there's a problem in your account, or there's unauthorized access detected, or click here to secure your account. The bad guys want you, and we talked about this earlier, they want you to panic. They want you to click. This is something called spear phishing, where they're not attacking everybody. They're just going after certain people who are using certain programs or certain platforms and blasting out these messages to them. Latest one that happened to be targeted recently is LastPass. LastPass is a password manager. I don't recommend it. I actually recommend 1Password. But LastPass users were receiving emails that looked like support threads claiming there had been suspicious activity on their password vault. So they got something with a message or a link that said, report suspicious activity or disconnect and lock your vault or revoke device. And all those were fake links. If you clicked on that, you weren't actually taken to LastPass. You were taken to like verify-lastpass.com. And it's not a real website. And it looks like the real website, but it was designed to steal your master password. And again, if someone has your master password for your password manager, they have your password for everything. So if you get an urgent security email, open up a new browser window, type in the company's official webpage, log in directly. If there's an issue, when you log in to the official website, not clicking on a link, but actually going manually to the website, if there's a problem, the account dashboard is going to tell you. If you don't see something there, you know the message is fake. Security companies do not need to send you an email saying you have to click on this link to save your account. They just don't do that. If you see something that's urgent, that's the tell. They want you to panic. Typing the address in your web browser is the best way to defeat the scam because you get to check on your own.
And again, much like what you said with Facebook, just slow down.
Just slow down.
Yeah. Don't let this get you all worked up so that you start clicking and you end up doing something dumb.
Yeah, because that really is what they're after. They want to make you think, oh, I have to do something right now.
Yeah.
No, you don't.
On a much lighter note, Patrick, I just decided that master password is one of the hardest combination of words. Master pass. I can't say it quickly. Master password. Try to say it, Steve.
Master password.
Oh, you show off. I
with the radio
be
voice.
Careful. Because I might say something naughty, but if I try to say it too fast, so wow.
By the way, before we wrap up, I have to ask you. See, Patrick periodically sends us a text during the week, and what was this? You guys were hanging out at the at LAX. Were you at some hotel this past week, or what was going on?
No, I mean, basically, Joseph, as you know, loves airplanes, and we will occasionally just go to LAX for absolutely no reason than to watch airplanes. And over there by In-N-Out on Sepulveda, it's one of the best places in the world to watch planes land. So we'll go there and take our Sikhs crane radio and listen to the incoming planes and listen to the tower. And we
so
just
we you know, thought you guys had taken it a step further and you had rented a room so you could look at them.
Because when I looked at what you sent me, it was indicating that you guys were in some
in a hotel room.
And your text was something like, guess where we're spending the evening? And I thought, okay,
they're going to be in the hotel for the
night. They got a $300 hotel room so they could look at planes coming in and out.
You know, I fully expect us to do that someday.
I have no doubt.
We were talking about going to Las Vegas to meet up with you to drive out to the Grand Canyon. Mm-hmm. One of the things that Joseph realized is that Gemini Jets, which makes model airplanes, their headquarters, at least their U.S. headquarters, is in Las Vegas. And he has already decided that that will be the first stop that we go to when we go to Vegas is to Gemini Jets in the airplane store. So just a heads up on that.
All right. Sounds good to me. Thank you, Patrick. As always, a pleasure catching up with you. And to our listeners, the show notes will be posted within the next 48 hours.
And that will be on our blog.
Yes.
Okay.
Thanks a bunch.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
We have a whole bunch of things coming up, so stay with us. If you need to get to us, you can text us, you can call, you can do whatever you need to do. Sunday is International Women's Day, and
the International Day of the Woman has been around for 115 years. Now, we've been around long before 1911, but we finally got a day in 1911.
I didn't know that. So, 115 years of International Women's Day.
Yes.
So, it was started in what country? Because this comes from a European country, doesn't it?
Well, I thought it started collectively. Internationally, somebody came up with the idea.
Right.
I don't know if there was one person that said in 1911 we need to have this.
I thought it started in some of the European countries.
Yes, and you might say, well, what does one do for International Day of the to recognize women? I know what I do every year. I go to my Facebook page and I put up the pictures of all of the women that are important in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I just give them a little shout out and say thank you for, you know, listening to me whine, or thank you for whatever, hanging out with me, shopping with me, enabling me to burn a little more plastic, whatever mm-hmm. it takes, you know. And then, of course, thankfully there are women that I work with that I like to
yeah.
point out that because of them, it's a better place to work.
And I know I've talked about this before, but I'm always going back to my first job in radio, and I was stunned when I was told by the person who ran this radio station at that point, 1966, you cannot play more than one female vocal in an hour because the audience can't stand it.
What?
And
I didn't understand that logic then. I don't understand it now.
And in 1977, mm-hmm. when I started as a disc jockey, and I was the only girl on the radio station, the mandate was you cannot play two women back-to-back because the radios will turn off if they hear two women back-to-back.
And at the point that you were starting, this was a point where you had Linda Ronstadt, you had
Olivia Newton-John,
Barbara
Streisand.
You had tons
Donna
of women
Summer.
Who were dominating
yes.
the pop charts.
Yes.
But don't play them back to
no,
what?
Not, yeah, you could play a couple in an hour, but not. So we'd made some advancements since 1966 when you started, but I remember being so frustrated. I was like, that's just stupid. Because, yeah. And in fact, I couldn't even go back to 1977, 1978, and you looked at the charts in the top 10, there might be seven women in the top 10.
And again, I know I'm preaching to the choir. It was men who were making these restrictions.
That's right. So
yes, I am a feminist.
Internet, you are. You have been ever since I've known you.
Yeah.
International Women's Day is not a federal holiday in the United States, but it
should be.
It is a federal holiday in other countries. So,
mm-hmm.
yes, it is widely supported in other countries. And there was a time when it started out, it had some socialist roots to it. So there was some concern. The U.S. was like, well, maybe we want our women just to stay barefoot and pregnant.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
But eventually it came around to, thanks to partly due to social media, that people said, you know what, it's not such a bad thing on March 8th to reach out and say, hey, I think you're cool and you happen to be a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for being a woman.
On one hand, we've come so far, and on the other hand,
yeah,
here we are. Okay, we have, we should mention, coming up next week, we're not sure.
Yes, this is true.
Because the only thing we know about next week is that the show will start at 12:30-ish.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, 12:30 because it's hockey, right, Julian?
That's right.
It's
correct.
Hockey next
Hawks
week.
Hawks next week, 12:30 on the dot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but what will be happening at that 12:30, we're not exactly sure. We will, because there are a couple of things and people we're talking with. So
yeah.
Check out our blog, and during the week we will let you know exactly what's going to be happening there.
In fact, Tom Appel, I understand, because he sent me a text, he's listening tonight. So adjust your schedule it may not be your night next week, just depending upon what's shaking around.
Yeah,
with the
we may be talking to Tom 2 weeks from tonight.
Right, because of the late start time. But again, March is real interesting. We're into March Madness. I'm sorry I never got hooked on the whole... Is it a big deal going on at work? Does anybody know? Because in the past, it's been a really big deal where people would have their charts out and they would be placing who they thought was going to go all the way. And it's much like betting. I don't get it. I don't know how to do it. So I just walk away. I'm looking at the clock because I'm still perplexed by the fact that my watch... For whatever reason, we were driving to the radio station tonight, and it decided just randomly to spring forward. And then I opened my phone, and my phone was talking to my watch, and it said, oh, I guess we need to change our time. I've never had that happen before.
Yeah, and that's...
Because we're in the same time zone as Chicago
is. Chicago is on the exact same time zone, and I'm just double-checking. Yeah, my watch is not playing that game, but yours is for some reason. And we have the same brand of phones.
But I think it's my watch.
You have your watch.
I think it's my smartwatch that's kind of goofed things up, and it was just convinced that we had either already changed our clocks or else we were in a different time zone because we're in Florida. And a lot of people do think that. They'll apologize when they call, like, oh, I'm sorry, it must be later there.
Yeah.
No, we're exactly the same time zone you are. And Beck is working at the board with us tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Beck, we used to hear that there was a place around here where there was a McDonald's that was sitting on two time zones.
We're literally, the kitchen of the McDonald's was in one time zone,
and
the sit-down place was in another
time zone.
This is the first time hearing of this.
Isn't it wacky,
honest,
though?
But that is crazy, and I'm going to look into this later. Because I
know.
Okay, now the question is, who's going to come up with that research faster, Becca or Julie?
Tonight,
this is our Julian Becca challenge for the night. Here's the clues. Mm-hmm. McDonald's, Northwestern Florida.
Two different time zones. Because I can recall, and this was many, many years ago, your dad worked in government here.
Yep.
And there was some talk about the fact that it was very confusing for people. McDonald's thought it was cute to build it on the line where you have two different time zones. And government was going, no, this isn't really good because you've got people that are confused and you've got a closing time. And it just sounds like... It was asking for trouble, and if that was 20 years ago, I'm thinking, did they move the McDonald's? Did they close it down?
I think it's still the same deal. And my dad was for a good 10 years. He was the city clerk of Panama City Beach, and then for 10 years after that, he was the city clerk of Callaway. These are both cities on the Gulf Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And
the Forgotten Coast.
Well, no, the Forgotten Coast is a little farther east of us.
Yeah.
Because when you get down here, you find that there are local designations for different parts of the Gulf Coast.
Right. And we're certainly not forgotten because we have spring break breathing down our neck. We're going to get out of town just about the time spring break really kicks into overdrive. We understand that that's like the last week of March into April. So if you're planning on coming this way.
And there are some specific spring break rules for different areas if you're coming down to Panama City Beach. And the local police do not play.
No, because they were fed up with the things that have happened in previous years, in recent years. And they said, we're just not going to go there anymore. We're going to see to it that you do not get drunk on the beach and that...
They have a drinking curfew for the beaches.
Right, and an age curfew for the beaches at night. And they said, we brought in extra personnel, so we're going to stick to these rules.
Well, they have authorities from a lot of these surrounding areas that said, okay, we're all converging on this area. Because it was, spring break for years was just a mess down here.
Well, there was a time, though, when it was fun.
Yeah.
You got to admit, the night that we had actually rented a car, and they gave us a big honking Lincoln Town car. And we decided in fact, we had a cell phone. We had a big bag phone. So this was back in the 80s. We had our bag phone. And we decided that we would drive down Front Beach Road. That's where all the motels were. And that's where you had the beach on one side. You had the motels. Mm-hmm. Most of them were mom and pop motels. Very kitschy, very 50s, and...
Okay, to give our Chicago audience an idea of the distance, if you can imagine, if you're on Michigan Avenue, and if you're going from...
The bridge?
From the bridge at Wacker, if you are going north to...
The Lakeshore Drive.
Lakeshore Drive to Chicago.
Yeah.
Imagine... If it took you 2 hours to make that
right.
trip, that's how the distance, and that's there we were driving in this big Lincoln.
We looked like mom and pop that got lost somewhere because we wanted to experience spring break right in the midst of it.
And as we're driving down Front Beach Road, there are kids sitting on chairs, and there are cars and trucks driving by. With scantily clad spring breakers.
A bevy of beauties.
And the guys sitting in the chairs along Front Beach Road are holding up numbers. That's a number 9. That's a number 7. That's a number 3. They were rating the spring break
girls,
females as
yes.
they were driving by.
And if a girl got something like a 7, you could see her jump off the back of the truck and go... Say a few words to the dude that's sitting in the folding chair. I mean, it was an experience. I said, are we in a movie? Is this like one of those cheesy beach
wasn't
movies?
Wasn't this back in the day when we called and we talked with Dick Sutliff?
Yes. Yes, we reported.
Yeah.
We said, okay, we're just now pulling onto Front Beach Road and we're not moving. So we're going to clock how long it takes us to make this very short distance. And wow, we saw a lot of skin. Wow. But it was quiet and it was funny.
Yeah.
And it was kind of innocent. I mean, nobody was naked.
Yeah, but then there was the one time.
No. That was Bike Week, Spring Break.
That was Thunder Beach.
Yeah.
And Johnny and I were driving. Well, this was not far from a condo that we used to own. And we're coming down Front Beach Road. We were walking, and there were a lot of interesting displays. So we're walking. A lot of great bikes.
These are motorcyclists coming from all over.
And as we're walking, and there are a lot of great bikes, and we see this one girl in a bathing suit, and she's taking a lot of pictures with everybody. And the closer we got, we realized, no, she wasn't wearing a bathing suit. That was painted on. Welcome to the International Year of the Women, by the way.
Well, Becca, you were born in this area. No, actually, because of military, you weren't.
No. Yeah. No, my family came here in 2007.
Right.
We were stationed in Aviano for a little bit, but I was originally born...
You were in Italy.
For a little bit. I was originally born at the Keesler Air Force Base in Biloxi, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. Lived there for a couple of years, went to Aviano, then came here. 2007, as long as I've lived anywhere, as long as my parents have lived anywhere.
Well, did you ever experience spring break like we're talking about?
Honestly, not that much, just because, like, my mom was...
She was smart,
and also just had 4 kids, and just any time we went to the beach, it was an ordeal.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we were just on the other side of the bridge, and there's a lot of traffic and stuff, so I didn't really get to see it growing up, which would have been when spring break was kind of in its heyday here.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good point, because we tried to explain to people, you've got a bridge that separates the town from the beach.
Yes, the halfway.
And they're different worlds.
Yes.
I you just made me think. Talking about when spring break was in its heyday, the 2-hour trip that we were talking about, that was before MTV came down.
That's
here.
Right.
I mean, the MTV explosion was after that.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-oh, it looks like Engineer Bob has the answer to the question. Don't you, Bob? The business of a McDonald's that's on...
You mean you beat Becca and Julian?
I don't think they were really trying here.
She had her phone open.
I did so many Google searches.
So what
nothing.
What'd you come up with, Bob?
Okay, the McDonald's in Port St. Joe is on Eastern time.
Yes. Oh.
The McDonald's in Wewichatka?
Wewichatka.
Yeah, that's central.
That's our guest that was here is from Wewichatka. Yeah.
Apalachicola is in Eastern time.
Okay. Yeah.
And Blountstown is in Central time.
But yes. that's still not the answer because there is a McDonald's.
Well, according to that's the best that AI could come up with.
You can visit a McDonald's and then you could go back in time at another McDonald's by going to a neighboring town, which is really
Yeah, it's got golf.
That's not what you said.
Gulf County is supposed to be the only county in Florida that uses both time zones.
Yeah.
That's it. Okay.
So it's possible it's one that's somewhere. Maybe it's the Port St. Joe one because that's Gulf County, right?
I should know this. It's so wild, though, that we could drive an hour and be in a different time zone.
Yeah, it is pretty crazy.
Yeah, because you think if any state was going to change and get rid of daylight saving time, it would be Florida, because that's just plain confusing.
And this is the time of year when there are so many people that are freaking out at trying to set their car clock.
And the microwave and the stove clock. And you have to put up with this because you earned this reputation.
Yeah.
We have a rule in our house.
Yeah.
If you're at our house, you do not touch our clocks when the time changes.
Because I know how to do it.
Because that's Steve's thing. Our dear, dear friend, Sue, made the mistake. She's up in the middle of the night and she decided she would change our clocks, and you are not happy.
There are some jobs that need to be handled by trained professionals.
Right, yes. And I have a clock in my bathroom that never changes because 6 months out of the year, it's right.
Well, when we came down, we both noticed that our the car that we leave down here, we don't have to change it because... Well, it was an hour ahead for the past couple of days, but as of when we're going to walk out of the studio, it's right. So why?
And I had an appointment on Friday, and I looked at the clock, and I was like, "Oh, wait, we haven't changed the clock." You know, it's little things in life like that. Because I'm telling you, I'm not the only person that will need a week to get adjusted to the time change. Okay, Becca, how about you? Do you have difficulty getting adjusted when we change the clocks?
It depends. I know I have an appointment on Monday that I'm going to have to wake up earlier than normal for. It depends on what my schedule is like in the mornings.
And the sky's going to be different when you get up?
Yes.
The sun's going to be in a different place? Doing traffic for 7 years, I got to tell you, that first Monday after a time change was a nightmare because people were suddenly like, the sun is in my eyes.
Particularly
I'm not used to this.
During the springtime change.
Yes.
Because all of a sudden, it's 6 o'clock and the sun's up. What?
And people, they don't have their sunglasses with them. They're driving right into the sun.
Yeah.
I mean, I documented, you know, for a few years, I was documenting traffic behavior the week after a time change, and it was profound. I mean, there had to be a relationship. I know we've also documented the effects on traffic to full moons, and we even had a documentary crew come in from Japan.
This is absolutely true.
Wow.
Documentary crew, they were doing the documentary on the effects of the full moon on people around the world.
Right, and they came in and sat with us one night during our show. And
we had heard from local police departments in the Chicago and the suburbs. They can tell when there is a full moon by the kind of calls they get. They don't have to look in the sky or anything. They can say, yep. Full moon.
Well, sadly, I documented, and this may have changed over the years, but one of the things that I documented were the serious truck accidents.
Yeah, that's true.
And it was bizarre. I mean, like, that was a crazy truck accident in Chicago the other day when... Did you see the video?
And it's hanging over
the semi. The wheels are hanging over the overpass, and it's like if you were to breathe on it, it might just topple over. And they were able to get it upright and And then I had an experience. I digress, but we're in the final few minutes of the show, so I'm allowed. ABC News posted a video about a fiery car crash on the Kennedy Expressway. And the comments that came in were people saying, well, where's that? And I realized that a lot of people, really people who were born and raised in the Chicago area, don't know the number or the name of the road. They know one or the other.
Particularly north side or south side.
Yeah.
There's, unless you commute to work, there's a lot of people who stay on the north side or stay on the south side or whatever, and they don't utilize all of the expressway system.
It was very late at night. I started reading the comments, and I thought, oh, well, heck. That 7 years of traffic that I did on WGN, being the traffic maven, starting Traffic Central at the radio station, I'm going to put some of that knowledge to use. So I sat there and I just wrote up, here's the name and the number of all of these highways. And Becca, you just drove up to Chicago back in September. Mm-hmm. It was kind of confusing because
a little bit.
People will say, do you take 94? And then all of a sudden you're looking, well, this is 90 and it's 94. And then we might say to you, well, just take the Kennedy. And you're like, the huh? Uh-huh. The what?
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything. So I took the time and wrote this nice long paragraph. I could not believe the response. Hundreds of people have said, wow, I've lived here for 54 years and I never knew this. Wow. Or I never knew who to ask. Or I get frustrated when I hear a news story like the ABC story that said the Kennedy Expressway. And I don't know where that is and how that affects me. So I did my civic duty. I put all those years of traffic to use.
And you got a huge reaction from our Facebook friends. But what we're going to do is take that post, and that will be on our blog this week, too.
Yeah, because we talked about it, reading the people's comments. And I got to say, in a world of trolls and just annoying human beings, everybody that commented was just... Nobody said, well, aren't you the smart one? Aren't you just... No one did that. They just said things like, wow, thanks. Thanks for taking the time. So that was kind of cool.
Am I seeing the blue light flash?
Yes.
And am I...
No Zamboni tonight because Bob is controlling the big plug. Oh,
but he still needs to clean the...
He can't drive
studio.
The Zamboni and maintain...
Yep.
The big plug.
Yeah, there he is.
Oh, make me a liar, that's Bob.
Big plug Bob. Riding on his Zamboni.
That's right.
And that means it is time for us to pitch for our last caller. If you would like to be our last caller and win some goodies from this here radio place, you can dial 312-981-7200. That number again is
312-981-7200.
And as long as you have not won anything from this here radio place within the past 60 days or 2 months, whichever comes first, you could win some goodies. So 312-981-7200.
Mm-hmm.
And as you are calling, I will remind you that next week we start at 12:30. We're not sure what we're going to be doing, so just check out our blog. And if you haven't checked out our blog, it is stevehandjohnny.wordpress.com. We would love it if you would check it out and subscribe. No cost. We don't spam you. You just get an email anytime we do a new blog post. And
no one else sees your email.
No.
It's between us. That's
just
it.
Just us. In fact, we should emphasize that for all of our social media hangouts, whether it's Facebook or Blue Sky or LinkedIn or whatever, there's nobody else doing it for us. We are the only ones that see anything you send us.
So if you have a question, you just come to us, and we'll try to answer it for you.
But next week, other than we're going to start at 12:30, we don't know what the heck we're doing because there are a couple things that are sort of up for grabs, and we'll let you know during the week. Check out our blog, and you will find out what we're going to be doing next week.
Before we take a break, I have to sneak this in. A listener from 608 area code said, it's my 70th birthday. I only have 23 hours to celebrate. I'm sorry, I'm laughing. Just look at it this way. Look at it this way. You were born on February 29th. Because we have friends born on February 29th. And that gets really old when it's like, I don't even have a birthday.
But look at it this way. In fall, you'll have 25 hours to celebrate.
Stop it. It's not like that. And 847 area code said, Johnny, your cell phone pulls the local time. If it pulled the local time, it would be the same as Chicago time.
Yet we have no idea why Johnny's cell phone decided to say, I'm in a different time zone. No, you're not.
And my watch, too. It's like...
I think it has something to do with your watch communicating
with
your cell phone.
Yes. And again, we are on the same time as you are in Chicago. So my... devices are not...
It's 14 minutes after 32.
There was a thread on Facebook about people losing their job, and someone said, well, what about Steve and Johnny? And a couple people chimed in and said, we haven't heard the whole closing song yet. They're okay. And I thought, good.
Yes.
You've listened.
Yes.
Well, thank you. And another listener just texted in from 615 error code said, I love your show. I'm laying down now.
Yeah.
And it just, it's not even 2 o'clock.
And if you were able to look into this studio, you would see that the three of us are trying our best to prop each other up for the final minutes of the show. You going to make it, Becca?
Yeah. We may have to, I'll drive her car and she can sleep in the back.
Okay.
Well, you had a full day, though. You went to the art show downtown?
Yeah, the one that y'all were talking about earlier, the Flux Art Festival.
That's Flux.
Yes.
Careful on the radio, that can come up.
F-L-U-X-E,
I believe.
Don't make me hit the dump button.
I'm not trying to. I'm sorry.
Because I woke Julian up. He was kind of nappy there for a moment. All of a sudden he went, Flux? Okay.
Well, I'm wide awake with energy drinks. Thanks, man.
Becca, choose a number. 1 to 10. Choose a number. That's going to be our last caller.
I'm thinking an 8.
Number eight.
Number eight is...
Takes us to Country Club Hills.
And Denise. Hi, Denise.
Ooh,
hi, Denise.
Hi, Denise.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Are you still awake?
Yes.
Good. Welcome. You are our last caller.
Oh, my.
That's a good reaction. You have a lovely voice, Denise. Do people tell you that?
No.
Well, you do.
Well, we're telling you. You have a lovely voice.
Yes.
What thank you.
Do you often find yourself hanging out with us on Saturday nights, Denise?
Yes. I had stopped for a while, then I had to come back.
Really? Oh, well, good. I'm glad you came back. What's your Sunday going to be like now that we're losing an hour? Not really, but kind of. What's your Sunday going to be like?
I'm not sure yet.
Yeah? Yeah. When you hang up with us, are you going to set your clock ahead so you'll be ready in the morning?
Yes, I am.
It's a 2 o'clock thing?
I'm in trouble.
Yeah, it's a 2 o'clock thing. You know, there used to be a law that said you had to do it at 2, and then they got a little bit more lenient about it and said, okay.
Now, how many clocks do you have to set?
I know that's a...
Three?
I mean, two. I take that back, two.
Steve already said, I have 7 clocks to set when we get home. Fine, I'm going to bed.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, it... So, let me take you back to, you had left for a while and you've come back. What brought you back?
Mm-hmm. Wasn't anything on the radio worth listening to.
And you came back to us. Well, thank you.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate that.
Yeah. So, what do you do Monday through Friday?
Well,
I don't mean radio. I mean, what do you do for a living, Denise?
Oh, I work at the USPS.
Do you? Oh. Mm-hmm. I felt like you were going to say, if you told us, you'd have to kill us. And that had me scared for a minute there.
No.
All right. Is there anything you want to share with us before we say goodnight? You've got to be the cherry on top of tonight's show.
Like along with setting your clocks. Are you like us, about this time in the morning you get hungry for a little bit of a snack? So if you have a middle-of-the-night snack...
What's it going to be?
A cookie. And I know it shouldn't be.
Okay.
Well, oh, no.
Okay, now we have to go down that rabbit hole. What kind of a cookie?
you know why
I like vanilla cookies.
Oh, you know what? Vanilla wafers. Oh,
yeah,
man.
Vanilla wafers and milk, I'm good.
Yes, yes.
That's me.
During that commercial break, you'll have to forgive us. But what we do is we talk about what we're going to have for supper when we get home. Because we eat breakfast on Saturday, and then we don't eat again until we get home on Sunday morning. Which is so stupid. Because then we go to bed after eating a meal, which is really dumb.
And we had wonderful pancakes and bacon early, but we're going home to a great cheese quiche. Ham and cheese quiche.
We're going to have a little quiche. And hope that it sets well. See, now you're going to be hungry when you hang up after we talked about it. You can eat more than a cookie, Denise, right?
I'm going to try not to. That's what
I do. Oh, go ahead. Nobody's looking.
It's so nice to meet you, Denise. Thank you for being a good sport. We are going to put you on hold, get some information, and we're going to send you out an official WGN t-shirt and wear it in good health.
This has been a fun show. It was great reconnecting with Michael Lister.
Yeah. And a couple of people wanted to know about his free books. Go to michaellister.com.
Yeah.
He has two very, very successful series that he does, the Blade and Burke series and the John Jordan series. If you like thrillers, if you like detective, if you like mysteries, that's what he's all about.
He's a really good one.
He's frightening.
We didn't have him on because he's giving us free books or anything. No, we had him on because we really, really like him as an author. He's been a friend for years. We buy all the books, and he's a terrific writer.
And we cannot believe, I mean, he said last year was like his least productive year. In a productive year, it's not uncommon for him to put out like six books.
Yeah.
You know, six. And I'm like, well, how do you keep it all straight?
And over the past several years, since he's been doing two series, you would have one book from one series one month, one book from another series the other month. He literally bounces back and forth. And now that he's doing music and working on another series, I don't know how he finds enough hours in the day.
But he did say, as a listener to the show tonight, you're welcome to go to michaellister.com and you can access the first book in each one of those series. Or you can go to his YouTube page and you can access the audio version. I think it's a buck for the audio version. But if you want to just grab your own copy, Kindle copy, just go to michaellister.com and check out all of the books that he has available. It was really nice of him to offer that.
And if you do that, I'd be curious if you check out his books and if you get one of the free books, let us know what you think of it.
Yeah.
Just write us a review and we'll let Michael know about it.
Absolutely. So thanks to Michael for stopping by tonight. And again, sorry about Northwestern. That was our lead-in tonight. They lost.
Yeah.
It was a really tight game. We thought for a moment they were going to go into overtime.
And again, if you glazed over at some of the things we were talking about with Patrick Crispin, don't worry. The show notes, all of Patrick's technology show notes will show up on our blog within about the next 48 hours or so. And again, we really would like you to check out our blog. It's steveandjohnny.wordpress.com. And we would love it if you would subscribe. There is no cost. We don't spam you. You just get an email anytime we do a new blog post. And
a quick round robin. What are you going to have as a snack when you get home, Becca?
Ooh, I don't know.
You're going to snack on your pillow.
What?
you're sleepy. You're going to be home and you're going to dive into bed. Yes. But you know what? A bowl of cereal would be really good before you
That's
go to bed.
That's not a bad idea. I might do
a
that.
A bowl of cereal.
Julian, what snack thing is
Speaking
on your
of
mind?
Cereal, I'm going to go home to a nice big pile of Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Yes. Good. Okay.
You got your Fruit Jones yet?
I'm going to have some Cocoa Puffs because I just like to throw the cereal away and drink the milk, the chocolate milk that you get from the Cocoa Puffs.
Why waste the cereal?
What?
Why waste the cereal like that?
Because I don't like the cereal, but
milk. Get some Nesquik.
Not the same.
Bob, what about you? You got a snack in mind?
Reese's Puffs.
Oh,
okay.
Okay. That's another good one. You let that milk.
Yep.
See, now, If you weren't hungry, now you are. So our work here is done. We are out of here. Thanks a million. We might see you next week. So watch the space.
And stay safe.